Cunningham for another extraordinary message on Gill Athletics Connections.
All right, welcome back to the Gill Athletics Connections podcast. I'm really happy that you're here. I'm proud to be your host here, but I'm really excited. This is maybe a little different. We're going to stay track focused, trust me. But as you've already seen kind of on the title here, not necessarily a track coach, although we're going to learn he did do some track and some track coaching. But you know, if you're a regular listener at all of the podcast, you probably have heard me say that I highly encourage track coaches to go into administration in some part of their career. You know, that's where a lot of decisions are being made about our sport, whether it's on the college or the high school level or at all levels. And it would certainly be nice to have people who understand track in those positions when those decisions are being made. And so we went out and found a pretty good guy here. Now we're going to go through and learn his past here in track and field, his history, his journey. And, but he's actually he's an AD and kind of a big time AD. I'm gonna have him explain it a little bit more, but he's the AD of Northwest ISD down. It's kind of north of Fort Worth, Texas. Actually he oversees three high schools. So he's the AD of Northwest ISD. So he oversees Northwest High School, Byron Nelson High School, and Eaton High School. That alone sounds like a big job. I've met plenty of ADs. One school is a big job, so I can't imagine. We're going to learn more. Help me welcome from Northwest ISD, the wise, the wonderful Mr. George Ludkenhouse. George, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. Sure, appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. You know, I love bringing different angles of our great sport to people. We don't have a lot of athletic directors. We you know, tend to focus on the coaching side here. So I'm excited to learn, you know, what in the world do you do? And, you know, maybe I've got some track coaches going, yeah, make sure you ask him X and Y. And, you know, maybe it'll be a little grilling here. I don't know. We'll learn. We'll learn together. How about that?
Sure, absolutely.
George, why don't we start with kind of give us a, before we get into your journey, give us a little bit of a background of Northwest ISD, the three schools, maybe the 32nd version, because we're going to dig deeper into what your job entails as the athletic director of an ISD. Kind of give us a, let's get a little bit of a scope of what you are, who you are, what you do.
Well, Northwest ISD, just to give you a little background on it, it's the fastest growing school district in North Texas, probably in the state. We're 235 square miles. We have three high schools with Northwest, Byron Nelson, Eaton High School. And then we're also opening a fourth in another 2 years. They're fixing to break ground on it, coming pretty soon. So we're filling up really, really fast around here. So it's always busy with construction and just the sports in general. So it's flying by, that's for sure. I've been here now with when I came in coaching, it was one high school and now we're fixing to be number three. So I've kind of seen a little bit of everything just within the district here in the North Texas area.
I wonder, do you sometimes look back to when you had one high school and was like, you know, I thought I was busy back then.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, when you're coaching, you know, you're so kind of focused on just, your kids and the program itself. And then when you kind of move into this role, it's more of a shotgun blast where you're just kind of a little bit of all over the place, but you know, you've got 13 different sports at the high schools and then all the middle school stuff that's going on as well. So it definitely keeps you busy. That's for sure. yeah, it's a lot of fun. But it is definitely, it's a challenge from time to time, especially with all the growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can't imagine. That is a lot. Well, the goal today is to get into an AD conversation. And I'll tell you, you know, if you haven't listened, I was blessed to be on a podcast called the AD I think it was just called the AD podcast. We ran it on as a bonus episode back in December here. It was from two ADs, one from South Carolina, one from Georgia, that do a great job with their podcast. And they invited me on to talk about, you know, is a track and field program good for a healthy athletic program? So I highly recommend you go back and listen to that. But the goal today is to kind of get into an AD conversation, learn more about what does an AD do? How does a track coach fit into that? And you know what? Don't fall asleep on me, college track coaches, because we're going to ask about what's that role look like for recruiting, et cetera, coming on campus. Should we reach out to the coaches or not? Things like that. But first, we've got to kind of like see if George has any street cred here. We are, you know, a track and field podcast, so we're going to look at his background here. So, George, any track background at all, or you just kind of, you know, you see for every 4 years, you see the Olympics, and so you know track and field.
Well, a little bit. I grew up in North Texas area, went to high school at Lindsay High School. And so, you know, those 1A schools, you play everything. And come about junior year, you find out that, hey, I I can do this track thing. So I ended up at the University of North Texas for 5 years, ran middle distance there, a little cross country. And then I got out and started coaching right away after college. Started off in another 1A right next to my hometown there in Ira, Texas. Was there for a couple years. And then my wife also coached. She was in Paula Point, and I was in Ira, so we came to Sanger together, which is actually her hometown. And so we worked there together for I was there 5 years before as a head track cross country coach, and then came down to Northwest after that and coached there for, I believe it was 9 years as head cross country track coach. Had some success with some kids, had a lot of fun, and then moved into the AD role. Oh, geez, 8-9 years ago now. And so I'm the B team, as I always describe. My boss, Joel Johnson, he's awesome. He hired me over here. So we have several different ADs within a district this size. But I'm fortunate to be over here and to work with a lot of good people. And then we have a lot of really quality track coaches now within the district that do a great job. And you'll see a lot of our kids down at the state meet this year. So looking forward to this spring for sure.
That's maybe more of a track background than I would have thought. You know, I get happy when AD tells me, yeah, I ran track in high school. I'm like, oh, good. Okay. At least you kind of know the sport, you know, that, you know, it's different than football, baseball, volleyball, just like they're all, you know, independently different. And not that I think you need to participate in a sport to be able to govern it, because that's impossible. You didn't play every sport that you oversee today, but I typically like, oh, you ran. So you kind of get it. You didn't just run in high school, which that's awesome as it is. And then you didn't just run in college. You actually coached for a while. What did you said you played a lot of sports, love that. What gravitated towards, why did you gravitate towards track and end up doing that in college versus maybe other sports?
You know, I was actually looking at football and basketball at the collegiate level for a little while, but I had a turning point one time, basketball game, and bottom line, game comes down to somebody else shooting free throws, and you played lights out and all that, and it's very frustrating for that. And so track was kind of a natural fit for me from the standpoint, if I'm going to lose, it's going to be my fault. Right. And so, and there's nothing better than a team atmosphere and all that stuff and the things that you can learn from that. But that was kind of a turning point for me. Like, you know, if it's going to be somebody's fault, it needs to be my fault. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can't always have the ball in your hands at the end of a game. And it was just a natural fit, you know, and then when you're younger, it's probably not the popular pick. Because it's not football or basketball or whatever it may be. But as you get older too, you start to realize, you know, this is kind of nice. I can go do this on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to necessarily have somebody overseeing what I'm doing. Running is just kind of one of those things. It's kind of freeing, if you will. But that's kind of the reason I went down that path. And then just I ended up at North Texas with a master's degree with emphasis in ex-phys and in biomechanics. And so basically track and field. And so I just love those two fields with physiology and the biomechanics side. So I love coaching all events. It was always fun because it all kind of ties together with what I went to college for and what I really, really enjoyed.
What did you think? I'm always interested. You know, I think it's kind of crazy in this world, not just in America, that, you know, we make 18-year-olds kind of pick the rest of their life going into college. You know, you pick a major and you're supposed to just know what you want to be as an 18-year-old. I didn't know anything as an 18-year-old. As you were going into North Texas, going into college, what did you think? What was the career, at least as an 18-year-old, you thought the career might be as you grew up?
Well, I think at that time, the hot thing to do was to get a business degree. Ah. And I started to go down that path. And then, you know, it's the more you were around. I had a pretty influential guy at North Texas, Ken Garland, who was there for a long time. He's in the Hall of Fame at UNT. And he was kind of my guy in college. And so I think we all have
a track guy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Coach Ken Garland. Yeah.
Oh, coach.
He was,
okay.
Yes. And so, you know, the more you get to know somebody, and I had an influential coach at the high school level. And so you just tend to gravitate towards those guys and just like, you know, that's kind of what I want to do with my life and the things they say and how they make you feel. And whether it's good or bad, whatever, you know, you see the influence that they have on you. And I think I started really about sophomore year of college, kind of going that direction that I want to coach. And that's the path I want to take. So I'd say it was fairly early on in college. But of course, you know, when you first go to college, you know, I'm going to make all this money. And then you realize, that's not really what I want to do. I want to do something I enjoy. And so that's why I ended up going that way.
I love you mentioned Ken Garland and the positive influence that he had on you. You know, I'll say this religiously. I'm sure I say this every episode now, you know, the positive impact coaches make on young people, it's immeasurable. You know, 99.9% are not going to go pro. Heck, 99% aren't going to the college level. If you're a high school coach, however, 100% of the kids that our coaches work with will go on to be moms, dads, business owners, clergy, accountants, salespeople, et cetera, teachers, coaches. So that's the true, in my opinion, at least, positive impact. So I love when you mentioned it, Ken Garland. You mentioned your high school coach had a positive influence. We love shout outs. What was his or her name?
He's no longer with us, but it was Charlie Muir, probably one of the toughest dudes you'd ever meet. He's from Winthorst, Texas. And he came in my sophomore year as our AD head football and track coach. And he was just one of those guys, you know, he loved you, but he was going to make you tough. And that's what I always appreciated about him. He's kind of the one that kind of pushed me, him and another coach, John Metzler, who was there. And I was a hurdler in middle school. And just because I was tall. And so bottom line, the freshman year of track practice, one of them said, oh, I need all the tough guys over here. And he was talking about the 400, 800 group. And I was like, I want to go over there. And so, and that's just one of those things. And I kind of lucked into honestly starting to run some of those events that probably someone else might not have put me in. Right. And so I naturally gravitated towards the 800. And then, that's always kind of been my love. That's probably my favorite event to coach. And then, you know, that 4-8 up to the mile, and, you know, I love cross country, don't get me wrong, but there's just something about those events, that really show a lot of toughness, show a lot of character. And so when I go to college, and that's obviously what I wanted to run. I end up running my first indoor race, and Coach Gone comes up to me and says, well, you'll be running the mile this year. And I was like, oh, it's not enough foot speed. So that's just how it goes. But it all worked out. But that's just one of those things. You kind of gravitate towards, you know, sometimes what you're good at, but also, you know, that they kind of fit my personality, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to – let's expound on that a little bit, because I love that challenge of, hey, I need the tough guys. You know, this is – you know, everything's hard – but I need the tough guys. And you're like, yeah, okay. Well, maybe I'm not tough. I don't know, but I want to try it.
Yeah.
What do you think? You know, it's one thing in the moment. And what I've realized, you know, at this age, and, you know, George, we're probably pretty close to the same age. You know, there's times in our lives where we have a decision to make, a left road or a right road. And it seems pretty small at that point. However, when we 20 years later, 10 years later, we have perspective and we look back, it's like, man, I'm glad I chose the right side and not the left. I thought I wanted the left, you know.
Right.
When you look back now at that moment, you can kind of, I kind of watched your face. You could kind of like, you were kind of playing the movie in your head of like when coach was like, I need the tough guys. And you're like,
all right,
let's go. What do you think, how has that played out in the rest of your life? Can you think of another time where it's like, man, you know, I chose the road less traveled many, many times. Maybe it was, you know, your wife, children, coaching, career decisions. You know, there's a usually when you're doing something at that age, it sticks with you as you move on.
Yeah. You know, over the years, what you just mentioned there, I think about that quite a bit. You know, what if I would have gone this way or done that or made this decision? You know, and you try not to dwell on anything and what you chose. You know, there's a lot of times, especially as a coach, and you'll get understand that, you know, sometimes you make a decision that, you know, hey, I'm not going to make a lot of money going forward. I know I'm going to be working a ton of hours. I'm not going to be home a lot. I was very fortunate when I met my wife that she was going into the same profession. And so we ended up, you know, when we got married and had the first kid, she was still coaching. And then we had the second kid and she was still coaching. She's as bad as things can get for me. It's never as bad as what she went through, you know, carrying kids, raising kids. And You know, I always remember the story. She was coaching a basketball game and I got done with practice and I'm going to pick up, she was pregnant with baby two. And I go to pick up the first one and he's sleeping underneath the bench at the court. So I pull him by the leg and take him home. And, you know, we just kind of traded kids off and just kind of made it through. She was still driving buses when she was, you know, 9 months pregnant. And She's probably the toughest person. That's what we always impressed upon our kids. And we talk about the tough kids and stuff. And I was like, there's nobody tougher than her. Now she'll tell you all about it too. She was one of those situations. It's hard as a coach to find somebody like that, that understands what we do. And so that was a big deal for us is she coached for a long time as well. And then when number three started to come along, we're like, okay, it's not going to work. And then when I changed jobs and I wasn't at the same school, that made it a little more difficult. So she ended up getting out of coaching. So I could stay in. Is how it all kind of worked out there. But yeah, you just never know how things are going to turn out, but you think you know until you don't know.
What do they say? You know, going from two kids to three kids, you go from man to man to zone. You know, it changes everything.
That's exactly right.
We had two and it was like, look, man, we can't handle two. We certainly can't go to three. You guys and gals that have three plus, God bless you. I don't know how at all you do it at all ever. I can't handle that at all. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So you start out as a business major because you're going to make a lot of money because, you know, all businesses just make a ton of money, right?
That's right.
You continue to weigh in on the influence of some high school coaches, Coach Mayer and Coach Metzler. Ken Garland becomes a big influence with you there. You switch over to, I think you said like a biology type. You're like, okay, I'm going to be a
kinesiology.
Kinesiology, yeah. You know, I'm from Alabama, so those things are kind of the same to me. So.
Everybody calls it something different. Yeah, I've learned that with my own kids.
So how did you get into, because your next step was you started coaching and I assume teaching. How did you, I didn't hear a teacher degree there. How did you get into actual teaching?
Well, you know, had a kinesiology degree. And so with that, I had a minor in history, like most coaches do. So I taught anywhere from PE to history, geography, world history, American history. So depending on where I was at, I have teaching certs and composite social studies and PE. Okay. And so that kind of came along with the college degree. So a little bit of everything. Health, it just depends. Yeah. I've kind of taught a little bit of everything. The only thing they don't need me in is math for sure.
I get that.
It's all, I think I finished up the last several years teaching world geography with freshmen, which I loved as a coach. I know a lot of people avoid freshmen, but I loved freshmen because you know, one, especially at that time, I was kind of on their level with a lot of things. So you like to have a little fun. It was easy to recruit too. So you catch those kids at a big school like that freshman year, and you know, kids talk. And so you win a few over here or there, you start winning a lot of them over. So that was a huge deal for me too, to be with those freshmen in the classroom. Cause I definitely found a lot of kids to help us out in the spring.
Yeah. I love that you brought that up. You know, one of the things I like to do is bust myths. And, you know, when we talk about, can a high school coach in the college level? And there's this myth of like, oh, you know, high school coach can't do X and Y and Z. And one of those is typically recruiting. And I tell you what, every 100%, every high school coach we've had on the show, and we've had quite a few from extremely successful to, heck, we had a coach from Kentucky who ran a home high school meet at his school with no track. He was like, you know, I just wanted to give my seniors a senior day. So we figured out one lap in the parking lot. They allowed him to build the sand pit for long jump. He did the shot put in the softball. And I was like, what a great, you know, gritty, no excuses. And I tell you, every one of those coaches, including him and highly successful coaches we've had here, recruiting is the lifeblood of a high school coach. We tend to think of it for college. I have yet to hear a high school coach say, yeah, I just deal with whoever shows up. It's like, no, they walk the hall, work the hallways is what I always hear. Work the hallways. You're talking about freshman year world geography of like, hey man, you know, we're pretty good. If you want to play a sport, come on out. So I love that you just naturally brought that topic up. Cause that's to me, it's just ludicrous when someone talks about, you know, a high school coach can't recruit. And it's like, they might have it harder. No home visits, no official visits, no, special bling uniforms and things like that. But some high school are doing amazing in those sense. But yeah, so I love that. You coached for a while, George. We could have had you on the show not too long ago. You said you've been doing AD since around 2016. Heck, we could have been doing this in 2015, talking about your coaching background. How did you evolve as a coach? I'm always interested in straight out of college coaches, whether they're high school or college, because, you know, yesterday you were on the team doing workouts, and then the next day you're actually running a team. How did you, like, that first year when you're actually, you're the coach now, you're Coach Lukenhaus. I knew I was going to screw that up. Not Athlete George. How did you transition? How was that transition for you?
It definitely was a shock, I think, coming from the college level to especially a 1A high school. Because it was probably the best thing that could ever happen to me, honestly, because you spend a couple years, basically you're mowing stuff, you're painting stuff. We had a cinder track. You drag the track with your pickup truck and a big beam every day before practice. And great to train on, just not good to fall on. But so you spend a lot of time up there. There might be nights that you sleep at the field house because you got an early morning practice and you didn't get in till 1 o'clock in the morning from some other thing because you're coaching everything. Right. We only had 4 male coaches on the staff for the high school. So I think the biggest transition was just the time. And you gain a lot of respect, you know, because in college you think you're busy. Mm. As I explained to my own kids, I'm just like, yeah, just enjoy the boredom, man. Embrace it right now.
I go back in a heartbeat.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. You're bored today. I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, that was the biggest transition. But it was great because you learn so much from those other coaches on staff. You learn so much because you're coaching every sport known to man, and just the time factor. And then two, you learn how to simplify things, especially at a smaller school, you know, where, like, as you get to a bigger school and you have a kid year round, the complexity of the workouts is way different than what it was before, where we're going to run 10 200s or 10 400. That's it, because they can't do the pace changes and stuff like that because you only have them for about 2 months.
Right.
So you got to kind of more bang for your buck, because as soon as you start changing things up and trying to do all kinds of crazy training, they're just going to screw it up because they don't know what that means. Yeah. You know,
that's a great point, George. You know, I live my life on social media, specifically Twitter. So I've been involved and I oversee a lot of conversations from all, I mean, you know, to me, it's the best thing. I can see the whole world. I can see college coaches, SEC, all the way down to 1A schools in Texas. Heck, 1A schools in West Virginia, you know, smaller states even, right? And one of the things, it's hard, you know, our box, our bubble is really hard to look outside of it. And you think, well, we're in a track bubble. Well, there's actually bubbles within inside that. I hear quite often a coach, and it's typically a coach who, you know, is doing a lot of the air quotes here, right things, you know, doing coaching education, you know, training, I'll say year round, you know, maybe training more than the state statutes are, you know, because of their state rules, they're allowed to do things like that, et cetera, et cetera. But where it turns sour for me is when they'll start, really it's judging. I'm going to just put it out there of, you know, I can't believe high school coaches that don't do X, that don't do Y, that don't do Z. And I think we forget, that's a great example of what you talked about there. Here's a track coach, you're coaching a makeup sports, you can fill in the correct one. Football, you're going straight into baseball, I'm sorry, basketball. You might have been doing baseball and track at the same time. Oh, by the way, you're a teacher. So let's not forget, you know, your 8 to 3 is structured. And of course, family, passions, maybe churches, et cetera. How did you, when you think about the sports that you did coach, how could you, and you are all forgiven if you say, yeah, I just couldn't, Mike, there was just no time. How did you work in coaching education? How did you work to become a better football coach, assuming you coach that sport, baseball, basketball, whatever other sports you coach? How did you, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. 8 to 3, you're teaching, for crying out loud. How are you supposed to fit that in? How did you, or if did you at all?
Well, as far as on the track side of it, it's not as complicated, especially coming from the background I had at the college level. And you get to know a lot of people.
You get an advantage. Mm-hmm.
You pick up the phone. you know, hey, I got this kid or I've got this group. And you know, for me, you could call back to college coaches, or we had a pretty good group just in the North Texas area of, you know, you go to the same meets all the time. And a lot of those coaches that have had success, they'll share, you know, and that's the biggest thing. You just can't be afraid to ask and say, hey, how would you handle this? Even before we got on here, I just had a coach that texted me and said, hey, I got a question for you. And it wasn't even from our district. And, you know, we communicate, we talk, and for the most part, coaches, especially track cross country coaches, they're not afraid to share what they're doing. But we kind of talk about the same thing that you're mentioning there all the time, from the weight training world to the track and field world, all that stuff. There's a lot of people who like to dog on other people with, like you just said, well, I can't believe they don't do this. Well, I'm a big believer there's best, but then there's best for your situation. Because I've evolved just from year one to year 15. It depends on the kid, you know, it depends on your group. It depends on where you are within your program as to what you should be doing and how you should be doing it. You know, and you have to kind of change, not necessarily with the times, but with your kids, and what they need. I'm not a big fan of just doing the same thing over and over again, because that's what we do. No, you've got to do what's best for that kid and their development. And now that I'm not coaching, and you see that from the kind of the outside looking in, but then I have it in my own house too, to where you're like, okay, this is how things should go along with your own training and things like that. And so those are the kind, you know, from an AD perspective, those are the kind of coaches when you're trying to hire somebody, that you look for that and said, well, here's what we do. Well, I understand what you're saying, but what happens if, you know? And so everybody's at a different stage of training, a different stage of life, you know, your athletic age, whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. Some people use that term. But that's a big thing with me is every year, I think we changed something, and it didn't matter if it was football, basketball, track, you know, you're changing your philosophy. And that's what somebody, I've had people ask me all the time, what's your philosophy on X, Y, or Z? And I'm like, it depends.
Right.
And that's an answer with me a lot of times when somebody will ask me, well, it just depends. I haven't met the kids. What do they do? Mm-hmm. What are they good at? What can't they do? What do we, you know, it's, everything's just different. And so it changes from day to day, from a training perspective, coaching perspective, from even an AD role. Every day is a little different. And sometimes you, what decisions you made a while back might not be the same or correct decision that you need to be making today.
So how did you, especially at the 1A, because I imagine you coaching several different sports, you seem like, I mean, obviously we can fast forward to the future and we know, you know, you're an AD over extremely large ISD. So, you know, success and improvement seems to be maybe some core values of yours, or at least some skill sets of yours. So that doesn't just start, you know, in 2020, that started way back, probably even as a kid. Here you are in a 1A school, you know, you're coaching all these different sports, plus you're teaching. How did you, maybe prioritize is the right word, how did you prioritize of where you're going to put time into improvement? You wanted to become a better teacher. You wanted to become a better football coach. I get the track side, and it feels like almost like that is the little bit easier, meaning you're talking about being at a track meet, and, you know, we know track meets, unfortunately, can be, you know, all day events. There's a lot of time to talk to fellow coaches. I don't see you running across the sideline in football going, hey, coach, so how did you do that? You know, there seems to be less. There's clinics and stuff, and maybe that's the answer. How did you prioritize how you were going to become a better football coach, a better track coach, a better geography teacher? How did you prioritize all that through the year that, you know, runs up pretty fast?
Yeah. As far as like football, you know, you go to every clinic you can get. You can get a hold of. And I've been very fortunate, the districts that I've been in, that we basically always prioritized, you know, we would go to clinics as a staff. And so one of those things, you know, we would go Oil Bowl Clinic, you know, in Wichita Falls, which has been around for a long time. Different things like that. Like our staffs now, they go to tons of different clinics and things like that. Summertime was huge. You know, we're fortunate in Texas with the Texas High School Coaches Association and then Texas Girls Coaches Association. There's all kinds of things. The Cross Country Coaches Association. I was involved with a lot of those over the years as well. But, you know, everything's done in the summertime. And so a lot of times as a coach and with a wife who was a coach, those clinics turn into vacation. And so you're going, we spend a lot of time in Austin, you know, San Antonio, things like that. And so, everything kind of doubles up. You're working, if you will, but you're also in the evenings when you get done with that, you're taking the kids here or there, and you just kind of double dip, if you will, and try to get it all done that way. But it's definitely difficult. You know, and I think as time goes on, it gets a little more difficult because everything gets a little bit more demanding with the way things are nowadays. But sometimes you got to say no, you know, when it comes to certain things, and you just got to say, this is priority this week. And I'm kind of a checklist kind of guy and move on. Sometimes if you get too many things spinning in the same direction, you just got to slow things down and say, okay, I'm going to do this today and then I'll come back to this tomorrow. Cause otherwise you won't get anything done, or it won't be done like you want it to be done if you try to do, juggling too much stuff. But, yeah, we definitely, growing up through it all and coaching, you find the time in the summers, holidays, things like that to go do things, to learn a lot. But like I said before, it's just the North Texas area is just a wealth of knowledge, Texas in general. And so many coaches that they just pick up the phone to, you know, and you just sit down or go have dinner and talk about philosophy of training or coaching or whatever it may be. That probably is the biggest way to get a lot of it. Cause clinics are great, and going to all that stuff, cause you can learn a lot. But sometimes when you get that one-on-one, just talking to somebody, and you do enough of that over the years, you start to get an appreciation for what others do, and it might work for you, it might not. But I'm a big believer in sometimes there's a lot to be learned from what not to do. Because, you know, we all growing up over the years, you have good coaches that you're saying, I need to do that. But there's also some that you can say, you know what, that's something of what not to do. Mm-hmm. Or how did that make me feel as a kid when somebody did that? And so, I kind of look for those moments in life and have for a long time of, hey, write that down. Remember, we want to do that again. Or, hey, don't do this, you know. Right. And so there's good and bad to it all. But, I'm a big believer in just picking up the phone a lot, just calling people. Yeah, ask.
It amazes me, coaches. And first of all, high school coaches, I don't care if you coach one sport, if you just coach track and field, it's amazing to me. Cause again, I know, and I have a much bigger appreciation in the last couple of years. My wife started doing a lot of substitute teaching and a lot of long-term substitute teaching. So, you know, she'll substitute for, you know, months, take care of a teacher when they're on their maternity leave and such. And you know, so she's not a full-time teacher, but I see what she does and it's like, oh my gosh, that's a ton of stuff. And it's like, oh my God, and there's people who do this, they're full-time, like, oh my goodness, you know, so I'm amazed that, you know, even if you coach just one sport as a high school coach and teacher, that's amazing. Coaches on the high school level that do more than one sport, because just looking at track and field, which, you know, obviously I know better than the other sports, it can be a 365 day a year, not only endeavor in regards to coaching, but coaching education. Like you can continually look to get better for 365 days, but you're also coaching football or basketball. I have to imagine, I bet you I could make football a 365 day a year.
Oh, absolutely.
Coaching education front and basketball and baseball, et cetera. So it's just quite amazing to me. Yep. So George, you're going through your coaching from first year, from 1A, moving up to bigger schools. And can I assume you start coaching? I hate to use the word only, but you divest away from other sports and start becoming only a track and field and cross country coach, or do you keep other sports?
Right. When I went from ERA to Sanger, which was a 3A at the time, 4A now in Texas, you know how it goes, that you get more coaches in a school of that size. And so it kind of whittles it down a little bit because things become more full time, and you get full time kids. And so, yeah, I went from there and I coached basketball, continued on there for a couple of years there, and as the head cross country and head track coach on the girls' side. And so I kind of transitioned too from coaching boys to coaching girls, and had the boys in cross country and then coached basketball for a while. And then it just became full-time cross country track. And then, the bigger the school, the more it tends to kind of, you go down to the singular sports, because a lot of those kids you'll have that'll be in your athletic period full-time. And so there's not as many multi-sport kids. I mean, you're always searching for those kids. At the same time, you're kind of running your program year round all summer. Right. I mean, you know how it is with cross country and track. If you're not doing something year round, unless you're in another sport, you're getting behind if you're just sitting around doing nothing. So it's just kind of where things are now, especially, you know, you get into the bigger schools and you're still searching for those multi-sport kids and trying to make things work out. But, you know, if you go up against the competition, I tell my own kids all the time, I say, well, that kid's training 12 months out of the year and you're training three. Eventually you're going to race.
Do the math.
And so that's just kind of how it goes with certain things, you know, but you find it depending on the sports, you know, a lot of things cross over and work together a little bit better than others do. Yeah. You know, you always encourage them to do as much as you can, as long as you can. And that's how it was with my own. And some of them did a little longer than others, you know, but especially in middle school, you know, all of mine were 4 or 5 sport kids, and just find what you like and go from there, and then let's go be good at it. So
as you went through your coaching career, and we'll get to the administration side here in just a second, but as you went through your coaching career, how did you develop and change as a coach, and how did that influence of your college coach and your high school coaches affect that and drive it?
All of my guys were pretty influential. I mean, they were the reason that I got into it. Cause you know, I think we all at some point have that guy. I want to be like that guy. And so that's what got me into it. I think I changed over time, as a coach. When you're young, you know, everything is just, I don't know how to explain it.
Everything is everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's everything's super important. Yep. And you know, it's very black and white. And I think not only as you get older, do you get grayer, but you're kind of how you look at life gets a little grayer too. And say, okay, that maybe I need to lighten up on that, you know? And so, especially now, things have changed a little bit where you got to kind of loosen up just a little bit. And, you know, you can't be as hardcore sometimes as you used to be, because especially when you're young, that's, like you said, everything is everything.
It's
important. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, sometimes you're like, all right, we'll be fine. We're going to be just fine. I get to work these kids out 12 months out of the year. And so if this doesn't happen today, it's going to be okay. It's not life or death. When you're 22, 23 years old, it's like, oh my goodness, but season's over. Cause we had bad weather today, you know? And so it's one of those things now you just definitely, you relax and kind of roll with the punches a lot more than you used to.
Did you keep or start a tradition every year of with the new kids going, hey, I need the tough kids and do them in the 4-8 or.
Yeah, we talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
I had several kids, one in particular, he was a very good 2-miler. And he went off, he was NCAA qualifier in cross country. But he was a stud. I mean, absolute stud. And he would get mad at me, not because he wasn't tough, but he didn't have quite the foot speed that some others might have. Sure. But he wanted to run that 8 like you wouldn't believe. And so I said, well, we'd throw him a bone every so often. Just with all those things that we kind of built, and especially with our girls program, we wanted every kid. And after a few years, we got it there to where there was a fight to be on that 4x4.
Yeah.
And I mean, because you can do so much with those kids, because one, they're tough, but two, they've got speed, they've got decent endurance. And then when you're at a smaller school, at that time, you know, can't even remember anymore. It's been so long, but a lot of the small schools were still running 2 miles like they do in Texas, where the 5A, 6A's run 5K for the girls. Well, all my 4x4 girls were my best cross country runners.
Right.
And so the distance girls had to wait till track rolled around so that they could kind of shine a little bit, because you could take those 4x4 girls and just because they could tough out a 2 mile, mm-hmm. you know, now when you went that extra 1.1, some things changed.
Yeah, it's a different event.
And so, I was on the committee when a lot of those rules came along and the change was made, and, you know, being a distance guy, everybody's like, well, I can't believe that you, you know, you don't want this change. And I said, well, I said, it depends on the year. again, you got to kind of roll with it.
Can I pick?
One year I'm going to want a 5K because of those are the kids I got. And another year, let's keep it at the 2 mile because I got a good mile relay this year. And they're going to come out and they're going to really, really compete hard for you before you really start hitting into the heavy track training.
I love it. All right. So let's start transitioning. And, you know, the kind of obvious question is when did that start entering your mind in regards to going to administration? Was it a very acute 1 year you got the opportunity, so you just took it? Or were there years of like, you know, maybe I should look to that type of job?
I think you said it best right there. It was quick. And it was one of those things that our athletic director at the time, Susan Elza, she ended up going and taking over the UIL at for the state of Texas.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, she was an influence and she did a lot of good things for this district when it started to really grow, especially kind of she made some changes and, you know, from more of a rural district into a suburban type district. And so my current boss, Coach Johnson, he took over her role and I had worked with him previously at Northwest High School and it just seemed kind of like a natural fit. And so when the opportunity came along, and that's one of those things that I think when I got into this, it was never really a goal. It's never really something I sought out. I think it was just one of those things that just kind of happened. And I had been the assistant campus coordinator at the high school. And so we have kind of, I wouldn't call them ADs on the campus, but they kind of the campus ADs. So you got your head football coach, who's the athletic coordinator of the campus. And then I was the assistant campus coordinator. So you ran all the events and stuff like that and got all the workers. And and so it was just kind of a natural transition from the campus side into the district side of things, which even when I first came over here was a lot smaller. You know, we've opened so much stuff between middle schools and high schools since then that the role has continued to evolve from more of a, like I said, a rural type setting to where we were pulling kids from all over the place. And now they're kind of split up and, you know, you've got 3 6A high schools with a fourth on the way, but it's definitely changed. And the flexibility of the job definitely changes from year to year too, as to what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Just like every assistant coach doesn't necessarily need to be a head coach one day, not every coach needs to be an administrator one day. And when I say need, I'm talking about skill sets here, not necessarily motivation or desire, but just it's a different skill set. What do you think Coach Johnson saw in you that he thought you'd make a good AD? And then kind of the add-on question to that is, what are the skills as an AD that you put in? I'm gonna call it on a daily basis. It's different from coaching, but maybe not. I don't know.
Great question. Probably need him to answer that one. you know, he put together kind of a group that kind of encompassed all the sports, you know, to where everybody kind of had a, wouldn't say a specialty, but people that kind of knew a little bit of everything and then kind of had a specific role. And so we all kind of split up the sports and things like that to some degree, and we all have our own little roles, but we all work together at the same time. But I want to say probably it had a lot to do with the cross country track side of things. So that you had somebody within that role that showed attention to those things, or like the individual sports, Olympic type sports, which was, you know, I've got a son who's a swimmer. And so you try to find people who understand those different sides of everything that we've got going on in the district. And I that probably had a lot to do with it. And then too, he probably saw that I didn't mind working. And that's one of those things. You put in a lot of hours as a coach, and then when you move into this role, it's different. But it's still, I mean, you've got something every night, three, four nights a week. It's still a lot of hours. And so you have to find a person that's okay with that and whose family may be okay with that they're gone. You know, and I've got kids of my own, and sometimes I can be at their stuff and sometimes you can't because you're watching other kids. And so that's one of those things that, once you find somebody like that, you know, they're not going to be gone all the time. And sometimes you got to be okay with not being at your own kid's stuff. That's a big part of it. And I think that's a big part too, that comes up with kids, or it, when you have your own kids, that, you know, a lot of people and coaches, I've seen a lot of young coaches over the years that they're in 3 or 4 years and, you know, they start missing stuff, which you don't want to do. However, sometimes it's just part of the role.
Right. But, when you went into the administration side, did coaching cease at that point, or was there any kind of,
you know, it's like I said, with a district this size, we've got, right. How many kids now? It's over 30,000. And so we're constantly opening new schools and, you know, we open basically an elementary every year and a middle school every 2 to 3 and a high school now will be every 4 to 5 with the way things are going. So, Wow. Yeah, it would be very difficult to try to coach and do that at the same time. Yeah. And so, you know, we do our best to hire quality coaches and that are on those campuses and then we kind of have that hierarchy, you know, where there's our office and then those, the campus guys to the campus administration. And so there's a lot of stuff that a lot of times we don't get to see a lot of those assistant coaches and stuff, but, you know, and what do we have? We're close to 250 coaches across the district. And that's, you know, it's not going to get any smaller anytime soon. So, you know, you try to hire good people and find good people out there and that are going to do right by kids. And right now, you know, that's coming up. That's kind of the big role coming up this spring is, you know, there's natural movement with the coaching world. And so that'll be a big thing come this spring, trying to find new bodies. And then when you open a new high school, hiring a whole staff there too.
Oh yeah. Right.
A lot goes into it. So we just opened a new middle school last year and we'll have another one here pretty quick again. That's a full-time job in itself.
Yeah.
And then getting out to everything else and making sure everybody has everything that they need to be successful. You know, you want to make sure you take care of coaches the best you can. That's kind of, we talk about it a lot in this office is, you know, we're a service industry. It's our job to make sure those coaches are taken care of so they can take care of the kids.
Right.
And then you get out and, you know, we watch a lot of games, a lot of everything. So
I coached for 10 years, a couple of years on the high school level and the rest on the college level. And when I got out, I remember, I always describe it as around 2 to 3 o'clock, I'd get the itches like, oh, I'm supposed to go outside and play in the sand. You know, I'm supposed to help long jumpers and stuff like that. Did you have that at all when you first, like, you know, the first track season rolls around and you're not going to practice?
Absolutely. You know, I'm not a big crier. But when I told my kids that I was making the move, it was tough. It was really tough.
Oh, man.
You know, the one thing that did help me with the transition though, was my own kids. Cause I got to kind of live through them a little bit and, you know, you try not to coach and I'm the first one I'll sit in the stands when my kids are competing. I'm up there with my wife and stuff and you let the coaches do their jobs. And, that helped. Being able to just kind of go watch them and be involved with them. But yeah, they kind of came along at the same time. I've actually never, you know, we talk all the time about, you know, coaches that coach their kids. And that was never really a goal of mine. And I know some people look at it the other way. My wife actually did all the coaching, like through youth league and stuff. They got to play their one sport a year growing up. But my wife was always coaching basketball. She coached the youth track and all that stuff when they did that. And I was kind of we kind of flipped roles on that. So like, I'll bring the snacks, you know, I'll bring it, make sure they have everything they need. And it's still in a lot of ways that way. My own kids helped with that transition a little bit because they kind of kept you busy. You miss coaching. I don't know if there's any AD out there that would say that you don't miss being around the kids full time, because a lot of the stuff we deal with now is just kind of negative. It's kind of like being a principal. My wife's a principal, and God bless them. It's one of those jobs that you know, there's some positives that go along with it, but a lot of times once it gets to you, it's not positive anymore. So you've got to learn to deal with that kind of stuff and then really enjoy when there is some success that's going on out there and make sure you don't overlook that, because sometimes that can be easy to do.
How okay to talk about your kids a little bit? Because
absolutely. Yeah,
you and wife, mom here have done an amazing job. So this was another reason why we wanted George on the podcast. You know, obviously his track background, I mean, it's amazing. He belongs on the podcast just on his track and coaching background alone, right? But you have a son who runs at Tulsa. a great friend of mine's head coach there, Steve Goley. I've known him for a long time. Love him to death. Tulsa's one of my favorite schools because it's in my favorite trivia question. The college mascots that don't end in S. As you know, of a dad of a Golden Hurricane, that Tulsa is one of those. Now I know you're all thinking this right now. Well, what are the other schools? Start thinking about the mascots. You know, everybody's the Trojans and the oh my gosh, what's UNT? Oh my gosh, the Mean Green. Oh my gosh, that's one of them. Mean Green. There's one of them. Yeah. Longhorns, Raiders. Find we just gave you two: Tulsa Golden Hurricane, the North Texas Mean Green, and there's several others out there as well that mascots do not end in S. So you've got a son that runs collegiately. Bravo, right there. I mean, again, that's not easy. You have another son, I think, right, that swims for which, you know, kind of ironic, swims at Adams State, which is another amazing track school, by the way.
Well, and that's, you know, I'm not gonna lie, that's how we found it, because you know, knowing the running schools and Dr. V. Hill that was up there, and now Damon Martin, you know, just some legends up there. And then I had a coach in college that he trained up there for a long time. So I heard all kinds of stories about Adams State. Right. And so that was just one of those things that we kind of found it based on, believe it or not, the track and cross country side of it. And so he's been up there. He's a junior now. He just finished his conference meet in the RMAC this week or this last week. He's fixing to be done, and then you got one at Tulsa and one more.
Is the RMAC, you know, in Division II, that conference is you know, I don't know if I've ever heard it explained like this, but this would give you kind of the example. It's the SEC of Division II conference. I mean, it's just a killer conference.
Yes,
is it like that for swimming too?
There's a couple schools, Colorado Mesa and Colorado School of Mines that are they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. Wow. And so they can compete with just about anybody. And then, you know, you're getting that benefit of just the altitude side of it.
Sure.
And then when they do happen to come down to sea level, which is rare because they stay up there kind of in that little area. But it's a very competitive conference, and so it's been a lot of fun. He's got to see a lot of things that normally a kid from Texas probably wouldn't. And so he's got to do a little traveling, so that's been good. It's a great example of, you know, what sports can do. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, you use the sports kind of as a vehicle to get your degree and things like that, and to get to see things that you normally wouldn't get to see as just a regular student.
Yeah.
So absolutely. He's had a good experience. He really has.
It's funny. You mentioned the altitude, you know, that's a natural thing for me to think of in running. Did not think about that as swimming, but of course. Yeah. You know, I'm from Alabama. So like altitude, they're in the water. You know, that'd be my thinking. Like,
there's no altitude. Not much water. Breathing going on in some of those events. That's for sure.
And then you have a third son, not too shabby himself. Holy cow.
Yeah.
So, I meant to look up, is Tulsa, the oldest, is he a middle distance? Is he kind of 4.8-ish?
Yes, he was a 4.8 guy in high school, and it's kind of that natural transition. You know, he'll slowly work up in events. And so he was an 800 guy mainly in high school. He ran the 8, the 4, and the 4 before. Right. And he went 150.04 at Nike Nationals last year. He finished third at Nike Nationals. And so he's pretty solid. So he's
the middle son.
He's the middle one.
So the older one's a swimmer. Is the swimmer in, I don't know what the equivalent would be. Is the swimmer in equivalent middle distance type distance for swimming?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So basically, you know, everything's like 25%. So, you know, the 100 in swimming is equivalent to the 800. And so he's a freestyle. He goes from 50 to up to 500, which would be kind of like the mile. He's in the exact same type of events other ones are in track and field.
Yeah.
So can't get away from genetics.
I was wondering. Yeah. And then your youngest also a 400, 800 kid in his freshman year in high school this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He came on pretty late in seventh grade. You know, he did five sports all through middle school. And so, you know, we try not to push him into one thing too soon, but he started earlier than the other ones. He just was kind of that natural. He was the sports freak in the family. And so he got to play youth football that the other two did not, just because he had so much interest in it. And then, so when he got to middle school, you know, he stayed busy. He played quarterback, he played basketball, he wrestled, he, you know, ran cross country and track. And we saw with him, he went undefeated in middle school from cross country to every event in track, from the 400 up to the mile and a half. And so he got invited up to Brooks to the PR meet in Seattle. He had gone 157 as his eighth grade year. And so he gets invited up there. He goes and wins that meet and breaks a meet record, goes 154. Then we drive down to Nike, and then both of them run there, Drew and Cooper. And so Coop runs and wins the quarter up there in 48.7, breaks a meet record, and then runs 153.5, breaks a meet record. And then Drew goes and finishes third. That's where he ran 150.04. So there's some jockeying there with those two, especially of anything you can do, I can do better type. Yeah. So we saw that from the middle school to the high school, from his Drew senior year in high school to Coop's. His Coop would do something crazy on a Wednesday, Thursday night, and then Drew's like, wow, I better step it up here. Right. So
there's immense competition amongst your team. Yeah. This is amongst your family. It's got to be even more intense. We didn't ask your PRs because I don't care about PRs. And mean, like, you know, your value to me is not.
They're better than me.
Okay. I was going to ask who has the family PR in the half and the mile, right?
Yeah. I'm number three at this point. Dad's slow.
Did Swimmer run track at all?
He did. You know, funny story with him. So he started out as a runner in middle school as well. Yeah. And he went from 5'6" to 6'1" in about 6 months. Dude. And he had stress, and he wasn't even running that much. He was just running with what was going on at the school. But I mean, he was little skinny, and just he seemed like he was breaking something all the time. So we called end of his freshman year in high school. I talked to the swim coach at Northwest High School and said, hey, do you have a spot? Cause we don't push the kids to do this, that, or the other. We just say, you have to do something. Mm-hmm. And then when you do it, you're going to go all out. So we called the swim coach and we said, hey, do you have any spot? I said, he's got to do something. He can't play an instrument. He's not any good at golf. And so, he's just constantly dealing with all these different little injuries and stuff. Yeah. So she goes, well, does he have any background in swimming? And I said, well, he tears up Hawaiian Falls all the time, you know, wave pool. And so, we got him into the pool and it was, the videos are just night and day, you know, and it shows you that dad doesn't really know what he's doing anyway. But within a year or two, I mean, he's missed qualifying for the state meet his senior year, you know, and a lot of the swimmers, they've been doing it since, you know, kindergarten, first grade.
Right. That's what I wondered. So, if he was like swimming a couple other sports are very youth oriented all the way through. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, well, so he picked it up late. Yeah, he picked it up late. And so it all worked out for the best. That's just kind of how things go. But yeah, he ran sub 5 minutes in the mile as a freshman. Yeah. There was some ability there. And then, you know, he just couldn't quite stay healthy. So it all works out the way it should.
That makes me think of, you know, I truly believe each one of us is put on earth for one thing specifically to do, like, amazingly. Now, the vast majority of us never find that one thing. It doesn't mean we don't do things at a very high level, but it's hard to find that. Like Michael Phelps was put on this earth to swim. And thank goodness for all of us, for entertainment wise, he found it and then was able to, you know, achieve that. Michael Jordan, I think, was, you know, here to play basketball. And thank God he found basketball so that we could be entertained the way we were, right? And, you know, not necessarily that the oldest son is meant to be a swimmer, but obviously had, I shouldn't say obviously, it seems had a I don't know the right word. This is the Alabama guy trying to use big words here. Had the, could be better at swimming than possibly track. And thank good, you know, what seemed like it was a bad thing. Like, oh man, the growth spurt and he's getting hurt. You know, hey, we're a track family. You know, I know he wants to do it because that's, you know, dad and mom did, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, well, let's try swimming because that'll be a little less on the joints and all that kind of stuff. And he finds success. Like, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, you might have been a great swimmer, but you didn't have that opportunity. Yeah. Or, you know, it's just really amazing how, again, there's that left and right. You know, he had a choice of like, oh, I'll just stick it out with track, or okay, I'll try swimming. When he got into swim, probably struggled. He's swimming a bunch of guys that have done it forever. And he's, you know, trying to figure out where's the snorkel. That's what I'd be looking for. Yeah. But decided to stick with it. And now gets to do it on the collegiate level. And like you said, has amazing experiences traveling around, meeting a bunch of different people, going to different places, and, you know, being part of a team. That's I don't know. Those are the kind of things I just really enjoy about life. I mean, to me, absolutely. I love that kind of that story. I love that. Okay, George, let's talk about some AD stuff. That's what we, you know, that's really the only reason I had you here. All this other stuff is just bonus stuff, but I'm curious, you know, it's easy for, you know, we're a track coach based podcast, so we're going to say track coaches, but coaches in general, but track coaches, to complain about our administration, complain about our ADs. And maybe the reverse is true. I don't interview enough ADs to know that maybe ADs complain about coaches and stuff like that. So I've got kind of just a list in my head of questions. There's no real order here, so we may go out of order. I'll just fire away and you kind of just give us your experience at least. You know, I'll give you some reprieve that you don't necessarily speak for every AD in the world, but at least in your experience, which is vast. And I love that your experience includes a great bit of track and field. We'll just get kind of your take and thoughts on those kind of things. Okay. Why don't we start with hiring? You know, you mentioned opening new schools. You know, there is turnover in anything, but you know, in coaching, of course, as well. What do you look for? Let's say, you know, we've got a group in the audience of assistant high school coaches that want to be a head high school coach one day. What do you look for when it's time to hire head high school coaches? What skill sets are you looking for? Is it all about how good you can coach? We'll put to the side maybe that, you know, you need them to be an English teacher because you have an English position. You know, those are kind of, I don't want to call them happenstance, but we can't really prepare for that. But what are you looking for in a young man, young woman who wants to be a head coach one day? What skill sets, temperaments are you as an athletic director looking for?
Great question. And I go back to earlier on when I said it depends. And so a lot of times you're searching for one to me, the number one thing is you gotta be a hard worker. And you can't have success if you're the first one out the door. If you're the last one in and first one out, you're going to struggle in this and you won't make it very long. So that's kind of the biggest thing that I look for. But outside of that, it's like I said, it depends. It depends on the program. It depends on the school. You know, especially if you're opening a new school, you definitely want to find somebody who's good with a culture, building that culture. And I'm not saying a rah-rah guy because mm-hmm. you don't have to have that. But you want somebody that can come in and start from zero. And sometimes you got to have some experience, whether you've done that before or, you know, you're just a young guy that can or girl that can just grow with the kids. So I think that has a lot to do with it. It just depends on the job. It depends on like our district being so big, you know, it's different from one side of the district to the other. You know, you go south, you're really close to Fort Worth. You go north, it's more small town. You know, we've got 13 communities, I believe it is. It might be more than that now, that feed this whole district. And so you want to find somebody that's kind of a fit for that area. To the best of your ability. But definitely it all starts with hard work. Cause if you're afraid of that, it's not gonna work anyway. So, if you can find that solves a lot of your issues right there. If you can find somebody who wants to be around kids, and wants to be successful, and doesn't mind putting in the time, cause that's what bottom line, it takes a lot of time.
So how do I, as an assistant coach, prove that? And what I mean by that, if you were to have said, you know, my number one requirement for a head coach is that they know how to coach, awesome. Okay, I can prove that. I can show how many kids made it to regional, state. I can show, you know, freshmen come in at 5 minute miles and they left at 4 minute milers, those kind of things. You know, I love the buzzwords of, you know, hard worker, hustler, you know, chippy, you know, those kind of words. Those are great. How do you identify that? Is that something, are you always watching assistant coaches because maybe one day they're going to be your head coaches, or how do I prove that to you, Mr. AD?
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, we hire all the head coaches from our office. And then if we have a assistant coach, everything runs through that head coach. Mm-hmm. And so you don't necessarily have to impress me, but you've mm-hmm. got to impress your head coach. And then that head coach would come as a recommendation, say, we have a new school opening up, and they're going to come to me and say, hey, George, this guy, this is the one. And so you see those assistant coaches on the bench and things like that, but you're not in the coach's office with them on a daily basis. And that's where you learn about a person. You know, it's kind of like the locker room. You learn about kids and things like that, and the kids learn about each other. But it's the same way with coaches. And so you have to rely on those head coaches. And then we give a lot of latitude. If you hire the correct head coach, we let them go find their assistants because they're the ones who has to work with. Now we might, you know, weigh in on some things because, you know, it's a coaching fraternity. You know, everybody knows somebody. And so you help them out with that kind of stuff. But when you hire a head coach, you have to kind of rely on them and give them, you don't want to micromanage them, let them, you got to hire a staff. We can help you with that. You let us know what you need from us, but they've got to find somebody that they can work with because they spend a lot of time with them.
Yeah.
So if we're just throwing people at them, you might not have a very successful group because just because you would work well with them doesn't mean that head coach would.
Good point.
So basically we rely on those head coaches to answer your question on those assistants. You know, we when something opens up, we will email those head coaches or talk to them and say, hey, what do you have? Or what do you think? Or is anybody ready on your staff that we could bring in and talk to?
Love that. Well, that begets a follow-up question. How do you, what is your role as the athletic director to help a coach out with all the other stuff? So it's one thing to be good or capable enough coaching the actual, I'll call it the X's and O's of what happens during track practice and at a meet, but there's other things coaches have to do. There's budgeting. They have to give you a budget request. Maybe, and I don't necessarily know, you correct me and maybe add stuff that I'm going to miss, scheduling buses. Maybe they have to, you know, a first time head coach has to write up what the team rules and conduct and expectations are. How do you, what's your role as an athletic director to help new coaches out with that aspect?
We do a lot of that. We've got a lot of stuff online to help with the coaches and checklists and things like that that we go through with them. Me personally, just from this office, I'm kind of the travel agent, believe it or not. So we've got I handle all hotels, charter buses, things like that, so that the head coaches don't have to worry about that. So bottom line, they send me, hey, coach, I need this, this, and this. Got it. And I get it done. And when it's done, I send it to them. So that's one thing we can help take off their plate. We have another guy in our office, Coach Kern, that he helps with all the buses, just the yellow dogs, all that kind of stuff, and helping them with their certifications. I handle booster clubs. We got 39 of those across the district. So I do all the booster club trainings, go through all the rules and things like that, and bank statements and all that fun stuff that people don't realize that we do.
Right.
And we don't necessarily want to talk about it either, because it's not that much fun sometimes. Yes. You know, it's not real glamorous. And so, yeah, there's a lot of things that we do that people don't see, but if we don't do them, people will see.
Right. Oh, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So it's a lot of behind the scenes type stuff. And so this is one of those jobs that if you want a lot of pats on the back, you're not going to get those. And that's okay. You have to be okay. It's kind of like being a head coach. You know, where everybody loves the backup quarterback. Everybody loves the, you know, the assistant coach or the first assistant. But once you kind of move into another role, don't count on always getting a lot of love, because you just get a lot of the problems. But that's just how it goes. That's just part of it. And you know that going into it. But it's okay. You know, it's not that big a deal. So
did you just said, you know, that going into it, you know, you have experience. It wasn't that long ago. You definitely had some years in the athletic director, but it wasn't 30 years ago.
Yeah.
When you moved into AD, did you know and expect that, or was that an adjustment for you?
Yeah, it was an adjustment, but for the most part, we had a gentleman here, Coach Prescott, that he retired 4 or 5 years ago. He was just kind of that Yoda, you know, that everybody went to, and you could sit down and he would just shoot you straight. And like, hey, what is this role going to be? And he could kind of talk you through that. The good thing that we do here is we kind of grow our own administrators, and kind of like I mentioned before, those head football coaches that are the campus coordinators, and then you have those assistant campus coordinators. So very rarely do we go outside of the district, because we've got the next ones on one of those campuses somewhere, much like you were talking about. How do you know an assistant coach is ready to be a head coach?
Right.
There's kind of that pipeline there, and you always want to go within your own people first. One, because not because it's easy, but two, they already have done the job to some degree, just maybe on a smaller scale. And so as they work up, you know, it's, it just changes just, well, you did it at one school, basically the same role. Now you're doing it for the whole district. Yep. And so that's kind of how we approach things here. It doesn't mean it's right, but it sure seems to work for us.
Yeah. So. No, that makes a lot of sense. They already know a little bit about the culture and expectations and even simple things that you think aren't, it's not in the training manual, but where to go for this, who to talk to for that. They already know those things.
Exactly. So
they come in day one operating at, say, 50%, where a newbie from the outside comes in operating at 1%. And that, that 1 to 50 is a big haul. Yeah, I get that.
Absolutely.
What role, and it may not be an official role, George, it may not be like, hey, this is part of my job description. It may just be as a former track coach and athlete, et cetera. What role do you have in encouraging your coaches in regards to the coaching education side?
We send our coaches, we have it set up basically. So we will pay from a district side for our head coaches to go to clinics. And then the head coaches in turn have the ability to budgetary out of their own budgets to pay for assistant coaches to go as well. So our guys don't lack for getting to go to, you know, clinics and things like that. And like I said before, in the North Texas area, there's tons of stuff just right here in the state of Texas. You know, we take staffs to coaching school with THSCA, and they do all the cross country track clinics, you know, volleyball, basketball. Basically, we encourage and then we pay for their memberships from a district level so that they will get involved, so that they can, you know, nominate their kids for those all-state honors being a part of those associations. So basically, we try to take care of those head coaches the best we can. And then those head coaches kind of in turn take care of those assistant coaches who are interested and want to move on as well.
Yeah, I got a shout out. We've mentioned a couple of organizations, a couple that I've worked with hand in hand. You know, you mentioned there in the summer, the THSCA, the Texas High School Coaches Association. They actually invited me back last year, and for some reason invited me back to be the MC for the track coaches portion. So, you know, I just enjoy serving other coaches and be able to help facilitate the room with amazing, I mean, like really amazing speakers. I mean, the coaches that they have that come up are just awesome. You know, I couldn't talk to a Texas track guy without talking about the TTFCA, the Texas Track and Field Coaches Association, Stu Canner. Good
love
friend.
It.
Yeah, love him. Exactly. And then there's many other, you know, the Texas AD convention is a great convention. You mentioned the Texas Girls Coaches. It really is, you know, I know it's a big state, so maybe there stands the reason that there'd be a lot of organizations, but while that may be true, my experience has been the people in those organizations are also top-notch people. It's not just organization for organization's sake. So just want to make sure we mentioned
that. Yeah, we're very spoiled in Texas, and you know, I have friends outside the state, and the things that we get to do in Texas, and just the competition. And that's just not just the kids, but even within the coaching ranks and all that stuff and all the, it's top notch here. You know, we are very spoiled compared to a lot of others. A lot of opportunities here, professionally, you know, and then coaching wise, and just the athletes that are in the state of Texas is just amazing.
All right. Let's keep on our AD Q&A, our fire any questions here. In fact, you know, I didn't mean to say it that way, but that was my next question. Being sensitive, of course, personnel reasons, et cetera. I'm going to ask it in a little bit different way than I was originally thinking. What would cause you to fire a coach? What's some things that, you know, as a high school coach, you need to be aware of that, hey, this is just, you just don't do it. This is going to get you on the list of you're not going to be coaching in my district anymore.
Yeah. We always talk about things that basically are newsworthy, and that's what we want to stay off the news. That's step one. So, you know, I don't want to go into detail on any of that stuff,
correct.
But, you know, that's step one on that. I'm a big believer, you know, and we all have kind of our own philosophies, even in this office, on things like that. But I'm a big believer that you can be competitive with whatever it is you have. And I'm not saying that you can win everything. I'm not saying you're going to win a state title, because we all have different levels of talent, even within a district this size. But you can be competitive. You know, you can be in every game, or you can be in every meet, and you can compete hard. That goes back to kids that want to go hard, coaches that want to go hard and work hard. If I see that, and I'm saying, man, we're not very good here, but man, do they go hard. You know, if you're a basketball coach and you play great defense and you can't shoot to save your life, but you're working on it, you can keep the game, the score low, just because the effort on the other end of the floor is there. So there's little things like that to me that that's huge. And because I know you're not going to win a district title every year. You're not going to, most of us, how many of us will ever win a state title?
Right.
You know, you can do it for a long time and you just might not have the horses from year to year. And so, like I said previously, before we got on here, you know, good kids make good coaches. And, so I just think that I don't care what you have talent wise, you can still be competitive, because if you can get the kids on the same page and kind of going all that same direction and they're willing to run through a wall for you, you're going to be okay. Yeah. You know, and you're going to teach lessons along the way. You're going to develop character along the way. You know, just that, that hard work mentality. We're going to get after it every year and do the best we can with what we got.
You know, kind of as an aside to that, someone on Twitter within the past year made kind of a controversial statement in regards to a little bit what you're just talking about there. And I actually kind of agreed. It kind of goes against the sport credo of winning and must win. And, you know, if you ain't first, you last and all that kind of stuff. The comment was, I believe he or she, I can't remember who was, said something to the effect of, I'm not sure a coach should be fired because they're not winning. And I think they were referring specifically to high school. And what made me think about it was exactly the other intangibles that you're talking about of, like, you know, are you trying hard? Are you teaching? Are you leading the individuals? And, you know, you go back to one of my original statements that 99.9% ain't going on to the next level. So we're talking about high school here, and I'll say there's no recruiting, meaning you don't get to go find the kid from Washington to come to your team in New York like we do in the college level. You have what you have. And it kind of, you know, my first instinct, of course, was like, no, you got to win. You know, you're a coach, you're supposed to win. And then I was like, you know what? Winning's hard. And I don't mean then we shouldn't try for hard things. I'm just saying there's only one district team winner. There's only one district 100 meter champ. There's only one state team title winner in your class. There's only one milestone. I think we tend to undervalue how hard winning is. And so to take a coach who doesn't win, hasn't won, and say, well, you're not a success, you need to be fired. Man, there's only one person. And God bless. I know specifically in the state of Texas, I know plenty of like awesome coaches, like coach you out of a, you know, coach you left and right, and haven't won a team title. Because again, there's only one. There's only one in that class every stinking year. So just made me kind of think about that in regards to, I like that your first answer wasn't, well, yeah, how many times have they won districts or regionals? Are they pulling in titles? Are they, you know, or how many kids are they sending to college? And it's like, and you might have a genetics rule. You might have a bunch of kids who just don't have the genetics, but coaches worked them up. And to your point, they've kept it close, or they're respectable. The coach is doing the things to make themselves better, to make the team better. Like, oh, okay, you're improving yourself to make the team better. Those seem to be values that you, values that you crave there.
Yeah. I'm a big believer. And I guess the best way I can explain it is if you give me a 7:30 miler out of middle school, and the guy next door got a 6-minute miler out of middle school, where did we start? Where did we finish? And so, you know, you can only do so much. But yeah, of course, you know, there's the X's and O's of a lot of everything. And that's what everybody likes to debate. Well, we should run this offense. We should run this defense. Okay. Well, yeah, that looks cool. And I know you saw that on TV. However, you know, I don't have that guy at middle linebacker that runs 4.4 and weighs, you know, 250 pounds. Okay. Or I didn't get, you know, like my youngest son. I mean, he's a step ahead. You know, you come out of middle school and you're running 153. Well, the other kid I got right behind him, let's say he ran 230. Well, success is taking that 230 guy and getting everything that you can out of him.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things. Success is, it's hard to define sometimes.
Yeah.
But I'm a big believer. Where'd you start? Where'd you finish?
And we can't forget, especially here on the high school side, we're working with 14 to 18 year old kids. Yeah. Their bodies aren't growing. Your oldest son is a great example. Yeah. Someone could say, "Oh, coach didn't do a good job," and you know that kid had to go to swimming. It's like, no, that was the human body. That was just his body at that point. But no fault of coach, as long as they weren't doing crazy things, running 100 miles.
Yeah.
But it was just no. Like we forget we're dealing with kids that are still. Mm-hmm. Not just maturing. I mean, come on, 14, 18. I imagine you were a little bit different as an 18-year-old than you were 14. I know I certainly was.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yep.
Okay, let's keep it going. Hey, how do you – this may be more of a personal question because I feel like it's coming up with my children. So, I coached for 10 years at a fairly high level. I coached in the SEC and had a, SEC champion, had a mini All-Americans and things like that. And I wonder, can I be the dad in the stands that just shuts up as long as things are safe – and let coach my kid or kids in track and field? And my kid's in junior high doing it now. Thank God he's doing the throws, which I know very little about, so I can't say anything. But how do you, you ran competitively, you coached really competitively, you still are involved in the sport at a high level, with your both sons there. How do you sit in the stands, whether at practice or a meet, and just – all right. I heard you earlier say, not to micromanage, but there's still a little bit like, man, why are they doing that? Oh, I would have done this. I need to talk to them.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Or do you not do a very good job? I don't know.
Well, I think some days are better than others. okay. And you can ask my kids. They'll probably tell you that. For the most part, we're very fortunate here. We were able to hire some really quality people here. Burke Benning is the cross country and middle distance coach here at Northwest High School. And, he was at Texas Tech, he was at George Mason. So, I mean, we got very fortunate to be able to get him at the high school level. And then Brady Reeves is the head boys track coach. He was a collegiate runner. He ran at McMurray there in Abilene.
Yeah.
So we've got guys that know what they're doing. And so that makes it kind of nice, now that doesn't mean that when we get home, we don't discuss a few things, but it's not about what coach is doing. It's about what they're doing. And, for a long time, when the kids were little, and they're playing upwards basketball with mom and all that stuff, we only have one rule in our house. And that was always, if you don't go hard, I'm going to let you know. I don't care how many points you score. I don't care what you do here or there. If you're not flying around doing everything you can do, or for one little second, I think that you kind of quit on something, dad's going to let you know. And mom might get to you first, and then dad doesn't have to say anything. And they definitely didn't want that. But that was it. That's basically our rule. And I think, their coaches will tell you that too, from middle school basketball to football. I mean, those guys, they flew all over the place just because that's how they were taught to play the game. There's no loafing, there's no relaxing. And so when junior high kids are out there kind of cruising the 400, mine are just getting it from the gun. And I say, if you die, you die.
Right, yeah.
And then next week you'll die a little later down the track. And so that's kind of just our philosophy parent wise and just get after it. And that's kind of how I was as a coach. We always say all out all the way. It doesn't matter. 400, 800. Let's just go all out all the way. We'll see what happens. And we'll start talking strategy as the year goes on. But let's knock that out first, that the effort's going to be there. Because that's the only thing you can control. Tell them that all the time. You can't control what everybody else is going to do, but you can control how hard you go. And that's it. That's really all you can really control.
Now I'm curious. You said if mom gets to him first, dad doesn't have to. Does dad really not, just because mom got there first?
Mom, if mom gets there first, I'm usually the one that like, hey, let's pat him on the back. You gotta let him up.
Okay. All right.
Mom, let's just be honest. Mom likes to win. And so, I mean, we all do, but she's kind of special when it comes to that. That's the expectation with mom. She doesn't care how you get there. She don't want to talk X's and O's. She don't want to talk training. She just knows from the gun to the finish line, she knows what she wants to see. So
I love it. All right, let's turn our attention to some other, pretty hot button topics here. How do you see it going today? How do you wish it might change? Is it even an issue? Talking about clubs, talking about outside coaches. And now we recently had from Texas down in the Houston area, a club summer coach and, very refreshing. I think the bad apples get the bigger press. You're going to correct me here, George, where I'm wrong here. So when we talk about, you know, the club coaches, and I'm talking about track specifically, but you may stretch it out to, I know volleyball club's a big deal, softball, baseball, et cetera, basketball. Some summer coaches, private coaches, want to rule the whole time. Like even when it's high school season, the kids should be coming to me to coach. Some high school coaches don't want their kids to go to outside coaches at all, ever, whether it's in season or out season. Give us, from the AD perspective, how are you seeing private club coaches? Going well, not going well? We need to make changes. Talk to us kind of in that environment of club coaching. Yeah.
And that's another one of those, it depends, because every sport is a little different.
Yeah.
And then even within the sport, a lot of the clubs are different. You know, you're starting to see a lot of contracts that clubs are trying to get kids to sign saying, I won't, participate for my school, during this time. And so at one point, everything went a little easier because basically the clubs worked around the high school season.
Right.
And now you're starting to see a lot of the club seasons kind of intruding on the high school season. So those kids are, they're kind of getting hammered and burning that candle at both ends, if you will, because they're going to club practice. They're going to high school practice. Right. And I think, and that's probably the hardest thing a head coach has to do, especially in certain sports with soccer, volleyball, of trying to make sure you're not getting that kid hurt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, cause you have an off season program. When your season's over, you want that kid a part of too, but they may be gone for 3 or 4 days to Denver for a tournament or whatever it may be. It makes it difficult. And I think that's where coaching to me has changed the most over the last 10, 15 years is there was always kind of a club scene even before that, but it's such a big moneymaker now with a lot of things that, you know, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So as a head coach, you kind of have to evolve in how you do things. You have to foster a relationship a lot of times with those club coaches. And you know, a lot of them work well with a lot of our head coaches and stuff. But, you know, there's always that outlier one way or the other that it makes it difficult. And then that's where the parents have to come in too and say, you know, I tell people all the time and say, well, you're playing at a public school, but you're paying them. So shouldn't you have a little say in what's going on there too? Because, you know, they're taking your money. So it's one of those things that it's a balance. It really is. And we don't have too many issues, but from time to time, especially with the younger kids, and from a track perspective, you know, middle school track meets, it's club volleyball season going on right now. So you might miss some kids here or there. And it's, the question is, okay, well, am I going to be real black and white and say, well, if you miss practice, you're not going to the meet, or am I going to do what I got to do to try to get that kid out there so that they can compete and help out the school. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen with them. Kind of like we talked about with the oldest, you just, if you keep them in the game and keep them with you long enough, you never know what's going to happen. So it is definitely difficult and there's no real good answers on that one. There's just, you know, you got to kind of play nice in the sandbox sometimes. And you don't like to do that because everybody wants those kids full time. You know, that's just how coaches are. But, you know, for some sports too, that club thing is a big part of growing their own program too, so that those kids get to play after the UIL season is over. So it's a balance for sure.
Is all of this helping to increase or decrease multi-sport athletes?
Oh, decrease for sure. Yeah. Cause you know, let's say you go through a fall season in your sport and then your club is in the spring. A lot of times that's going to keep you from maybe running track or whatever it may be. And so it's definitely difficult with that. And I think the bigger school you go to, the more you see that, you know, I go back to the smaller schools. You know, those club opportunities aren't there as much. It's still there, but it's not quite as much as it is at a big school. And I think a lot of times a lot of kids think I have to do this if I want to do this. So, and some of that, you know, it's, you just can't get around it. And so you just got to do the best you can to work with everybody that's all involved for the best of the kid.
Putting clubs to the side, maybe. What's your role as an AD to help encourage your coaches to encourage multi-sport athletes?
Yeah. We make a big push for that. And sometimes you have to step in from time to time. You know, and I'll be the first one to admit, when I was coaching, a lot of times you'd be like, whoa, wait a minute, you're going to do what? You're going to miss what? And so that's definitely different. Sometimes you gotta help people understand, put your pride aside a little bit. You know, it's in best interest of the kid. And very rarely does that come up that we have to deal with that. You know, we've kind of got a little policy here, just basically that, you know, if two things come up at the same time while a kid's doing the same sport, they choose, you know, that's up to them. And, you know, this, the coaches sit down, talk about it, how's practice is going to go, things like that. You know, the UIL has a setup here in Texas fairly well, so that if you're a team sport, you know, basically you're going to be in that athletic period during the off season, because the individual sports, track, cross country, whatever, you can go before and after school. Well, you can't do that in a team sport. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got there's some rules there, strength and conditioning, skill stuff. But bottom line is, if you're a team sport guy, you're going to be in that team sport athletic period. So you go there every day because you can go to those other guys after school at any time, which the team sports can't do.
All right. That makes sense.
So
that's good. You know, I just heard recently of a volleyball coach that won't allow the girls to play basketball. And my immediate reaction was like, well, that's just crazy. I just, you know, in his high school, not club. I was just like, that's just crazy. But then my, like, right on the heels of that, you know, just initial, like, well, that's just crazy, was, where's the AD in this?
Yeah.
Like, really, AD, you're going to allow that? This doesn't seem, right. I don't care how big the school is. I've yet to see an athletic program that doesn't benefit from multi-sport athletes, from athlete. I saw, gosh, I wish I remembered the high school I visited a year or so ago. They're so big into multi-sport athletes. So, you know how you have this there at your different schools, you know, you have your banners that have, you know, district champs in the years, or, you know, basketball tourney and things like that. They had banners for their multi-sport athletes. So they had two sport athletes, and they listed all their two sport athletes, yeah. Three sport athletes. And, you know, there wasn't very many. And then four sport athletes, which there was like two, and it was like, holy, first of all, I was amazed that somebody could do four sports. Like,
oh, yeah.
But I was like, wow, I really love that message to the athletic, to the school, that, hey, you know, we encourage, if you want to play more than one, we're here to support that. And I felt like they probably had more multi-sport athletes because of that, because, you know, you improve what you measure, and it's like, well, here they are measuring it, putting your names up, you know, for all to see. I just thought that was amazing. That to me is putting action behind words. It's one thing to say we want multi-sport athletes. Like, okay, well, we're going to exalt you then for being that multi-sport athlete. Love that.
Absolutely.
Let's turn our attention to recruiting. And we've already, you know, addressed the high school coaches, I'll say job to recruit the hallways. You know, I'm not sure you're going to have a very successful track program. At least it will be easier to have a more successful track program if you are always working the hallways. But I'm curious about your take on the role, both sides, the college track coach and your high school track coach. What role should the high school track coach play in the recruiting process for their athletes? Let's start there, because then we'll go to what you would hope our expectations are for the college coach. What role? I've seen both sides. I've seen the high school coach say, hey, this is college, so you and your parents need to figure that part out. And then I've seen very intimately involved, you know, calling colleges, et cetera, sitting down and advising kid on, hey, this is probably not your level, but this maybe is, et cetera, et cetera. What's your thoughts, your takes on the involvement of the high school coach in regards to the college recruiting process?
Well, I'll give you a little background on what I used to do. Mm. And so we signed around, what was it, 27 kids in my time as a head track coach.
Wow.
And how we handled it basically was, I'm going to help you. And, you know, you kind of go through those and you see those kids that, you know, can go to the next level, or you see those multi-sport kids that, you know, they haven't developed as much because they've been busy with other stuff. However, we know they have the ability to go to this level. So we did a lot of individual meetings with kids, and we would talk about it, and I'd work them through the NCAA clearinghouse or eligibility center now. And kind of, we sat down and we'd work that together with all those groups. We'd kind of meet before, after school in a classroom. And then my homework to them was always, okay, I want you to look at this conference, this conference, this conference, and tell me where your PRs would fall at their conference championships.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, the kids who are really into it and really want to do it, they're going to do that, you know? And so a lot of them would come back and say, well, coach, I would have been eighth in this conference. Okay. Okay. So that means you got a chance to get a scholarship at a place like that. Or coach, I'm like, you know, cause a lot of kids don't understand, like, you being an SEC coach, you know, I'm a five flat guy. I'm not going to go run in the SEC, you know? And so they see that real quick. And we used to post, a lot of coaches will put their college recruiting standards up, and we would post those on our, in our locker rooms. Here's kind of what it takes to run at these schools. And we can go anywhere from NAIA, Division III, all the way to, you know, big time Division I conferences, just so they had an understanding of what it takes to be at that level. And so then from there, when they started to figure out, you know, this is kind of where I would fit, that's when you start emailing, and you would kind of help them put emails together. And then you would just have the kids send the emails. And then most coaches, you know, or most programs have the online forms. And I'd send them, I'd give them two or three a day. I'd shoot them an email. Here's a link, fill this out. Here's a link, fill this out. And so I saw that, to me, that was the fun part, of part of my job, was trying to help those kids do that. I did the same thing. You know, I tell my wife all the time, I said, I'm going to do the same thing for my boys that I did for these other kids, you know, and help them find a home that fits them. And so that's kind of how I handled it. But I, again, I enjoyed that role of it. I think that's where, you know, I always talked about wanting to be a college track coach. I thought that piece of it would be fun. And now I know you probably tell me better, but after a while you're like, oh my gosh, recruiting's the devil, you know, but, from a high school perspective, that's kind of how I handled it. And you know, track is one of those things, especially, or cross country. I always tell kids, cross country gets you noticed, track gets you paid. Because, you know, cross country courses are all can be a little different. But you get noticed if you're at that state meet and you can make that top 10 or whatever it may be. And then you really, what's your track time? What's your mile time? What's your quarter time? All that kind of stuff. That's what really people look at. And so, I think our coaches here at Northwest ISD have a pretty good handle on it. They sign quite a few kids. I know across the district, we average around 85 to 90 kids every year from the three high schools. And that's all the way from an NAIA all the way to Division I. And so we do four signing ceremonies a year from November, December to what, February, and then a late one as well. So, and we handle all that stuff from our office. But yeah, we've got, some coaches that really have a pretty good handle on it. And then a lot of them have been with us for so long, they get, you know, the NCAA eligibility center, all that kind of stuff. And the NCAA, you know, when I first started it, I remember when it was the clearinghouse, it was a front and back form. And I think $25 check and you mailed it in. Now it's a little more than that, but you know, the internet is, has made things a lot easier. It's not hard to figure it out. And then to me, it's not anyway, but I've been doing it for a while. You know, it's a Google search away of step one, you know, you go and you can find that information pretty quickly. But, and then with track two, you can either do X, Y, and Z, or you can't from, you know, those times don't lie. Everybody's track's 400 meters.
That's right.
You know, the jumps, the throws, you can kind of go look at those conference meets and say, okay, these are the kind of cats that, that these people are looking for. And that definitely helps it. To me, track recruiting in a lot of ways is a lot easier than some of the more subjective sports. You know, and so a lot of kids get, might not be great football players, but they measure well, you know, at a lot of those camps and stuff they go to. So it's, to me, it's a little easier.
How do you advise, you know, another thing that I'll say on this podcast almost every episode is ego is not bad. Bad ego is bad. And so where I'm going with this is, how do you advise coaches? You know, it's kind of like parents. It's much, easier to sit around with our parent group and say, yeah, my son went to Harvard, instead of saying, yeah, my son went to Parkland Community College. Nothing is wrong. I'm not saying one is better than the other, although it was a, you know, it's Harvard, so maybe, okay. But, it, you know, it's ego to be able to tell, you know, my neighbor, my kid went to D1 or whatever, when in reality, you know, there's a lot of other institutions that might've been better for my kid, whether it was a junior college to start, an NAIA school, et cetera. How do you advise with coaches? You know, there's a complaint amongst, I even hate calling them smaller schools, lesser known schools. And the only reason they're lesser known, by the way, is because maybe they don't play Saturday on ESPN. Okay. I'm talking about NAIA schools, junior college schools, et cetera, that they get the feeling that coaches, when they get letters in, and they get a letter from Alabama or the great Troy University, that's where I, that's my alma mater, or the great North Texas, they'll give those to the kids. But when Neosho County Community College or Lindenwood University comes in, they don't, which is a, you know, agree or disagree, I don't care. That's a disservice. How do you advise the coaches that, hey, it's not your job to feed your own ego of where your kids signed with, nor is it your job to what's the word I'm looking for here? To sieve through what you should or should not look at, but what's best for the kid. And that involves not only the things that you gave examples of like, hey, I know you want to go to the SEC, but you run 5 minutes. You know, maybe we could find someone for you to walk on, and that might be the right answer. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that either. But you know, what's your goals? Oh, you want to be on a conference championship team? You want to contribute? Oh, okay. Well, maybe let's go look at the RMAC. That's actually terrible for a five flat as well. But let's go look at this conference or this school, this division, this level, etc. But also, your job possibly as a coach and AD is to look at, well, what's the right place for major, what's the right place, location? Are you someone who needs to maybe stay a little bit closer to home, or, you know, are you fine going across the country? Level, of course, NAIA, JUCO, D3, D1, D2, things like that. How do you advise coaches on dropping the bad ego and literally, we all say this, we do it for the kids, doing what's right for the kid, for that individual kid?
Yeah. You know, individual, you said it right there. Like with my own, we make lists, and I did with all the kids. What's your number one thing? What are you looking for? Is it your degree? Is it the team? Is it the coach? And I always advise kids, you know, that if you, let's say you don't run there, would you still go to school there? Because that's a big deal, you know? And so you have to find that fit from the competition level. And so that's super important. But like with my middle son, he had his list, you know, the coach was super important for him because he wanted to run fast, bottom line. Mm-hmm. You know, he had been kind of a multi-sport guy, and he only really ran for 1 year. And when that was all he did, everything else, he was doing other things as well. And so the coach was a big deal. And then the team for him was a big deal because he never really had a team to train with. Mm-hmm. Every practice, he was basically flying solo. Because they just didn't have other guys that did what he did, right, or could do what he did. And so, you know, that he wanted the idea of to being able to train with a quality group of guys. He wanted a quality coach. And then, you know, I'm not going to say education was third, but we also know in our family, that piece of paper, I can get that anywhere, you know, especially depending on what your degree is going to be. And at that time, I think he, of course, just like everybody in the family, he was going to go be a coach. So, you know, a lot of people don't go to Tulsa University at a private school to become an educator. So his big draw there was the team and the coach, and somewhat close to home, you know, because our other one was he's way up out of in the middle of nowhere up there, 10 hours away from us. And he saw how kind of a strain that was. And so he's like, well, I'd like to be around a little closer. But it was the team and the coach that drew him there. But everybody's going to be a little different on that. You know, we've had kids that degree was number one. You know, I've got a girl that ran 4 years ago. She's up at Boston University becoming a neurosurgeon. And so, you know, you've got to kind of balance that. You've got to find, and I think that's kind of what you're talking about is having those conversations with the parents and with the kid. Where do you fit athletically? And then what are your priorities going forward? You know, and again, if you go to school there and let's say you get injured or you're just not on the team anymore, are you going to stay there? Because if you stay there, then I think then that's the right place for you. If you can say, I would go to college there, even if I wasn't competing, I think that's an important thing to think about when you're making that decision. But everybody's going to be a little bit different and everybody has different motives. You just have to find that right fit for each person, competitive level and then the academic side of it as well. Everybody's going to be a little different on that one.
And earlier you said about when we were talking about club coaches, you talked about, well, the parents need to be involved as well. And I think because you know, we ask these coaches to do all those things that you just mentioned in for the individual. Well, every individual is different. Mm-hmm. I mean, what fits this one kid, they may be very similar in a lot of aspects, whether it's grades and events and PRs, homesickness, et cetera. They can be very similar. But two very different schools are curriculum. I love your example of your oldest being at Adams State. I have to imagine, and this is no slam on Adams State because I think a lot of Adams State, you have to explain when you know, say, oh, where's your son go? Goes Adams State. Oh, where's that? That's probably a natural reaction. You know, say, oh, it's, you know, it's a great school up in Colorado, blah, blah, blah. You know, your middle son's maybe a little bit easier. You know, goes University of Tulsa. Okay, well, I know where Tulsa, Oklahoma is. What kind of school is that? You know, those kind of things. But you didn't succumb to like, hey man, you could walk on at Alabama, you know, it'd be a lot, I'd be a lot cooler amongst my parent group if I told them my kid's Alabama. So I love that example of like Adams is the right place for him. Tulsa is the right place for him. And Lord knows.
Well, and some, you know, we even asked, say, how important are those Saturday football games? Do you want to be at what you see? And you know how it is. Football kind of drives admissions. And you have a really good team, you know, if you're at the University of Texas or wherever it may be, and they have a great year, those admissions are going to go up. And for some, there's some kids that the right fit for them is I might never make a conference team. However, I get to go to football games on Saturday, you know.
And we need to stop demonizing that, by the way. I agree. We all have our own reasons for going to whatever school we go to. One of those could be to your example right there. You know what? I'm not going to go pro. But you know what? I do like college football. Or I like the pageantry atmosphere of it. So So I want to go somewhere where it's quote unquote big games or whatever, those kind of things. Another reason might be, hey, you know what? I have zero money. My family has zero money. I don't care where it is. I have to have a full ride. I see this too many times where we demonize that. Well, you're just chasing the money. You don't really love the sport. It's like, okay, maybe that's true because they need it. Who are you to judge on this? And as far as going, you know, that kid could have come to my school and, you know, been all conference. Instead, they went to this other school just because they have a big football team. They're not going pro. 20 years from now, they'll be able to talk about, you know, I was on a great team, met a lot of great people. And man, let me tell you, when our football team beat so-and-so and it was all, you know, whatever, we got to stop demonizing.
That's a good experience too.
Choices. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Use sport as your vehicle to get what you want.
That's exactly right. Use the sport. That's exactly right. You don't owe that sport anything. You don't owe its dedication. You don't owe it your passion 100%. That's exactly right. Okay, we got a few more minutes. I want to get a couple more questions in. I do want to talk about the reverse side there, the college recruiting side. Big debate is, should a college coach call the high school coach to ask about Sally or Sam? Should they just talk to the parents and the kid because that's who they're going to be working with after? What's your thoughts as an AD? You sit in that kind of role of college recruiters for your kids in the role of your high school coach.
I think you said it there that I am always a little leery if a college coach doesn't talk to the high school coach.
Okay.
And I say that because who's with them more? You know, who sees the attitude on a daily basis? Who sees the work ethic on a daily basis? And especially if you're in an established program that turns out kids year after year, that go on to the collegiate level. I think that is a red flag to me. If you don't contact that high school coach, I've had it both ways over the years. And again, it doesn't mean I'm wrong or doesn't mean I'm right, but I know as a head coach, I appreciated that, a little bit, just to touch base. Hey, I'm talking to whoever. And then, you know, you can talk to the kids because some coaches are more involved than others in the recruiting process. I was fairly involved with ours. But there were some that didn't reach out, and that's okay too. I mean, that's just, that's maybe their philosophy. But definitely, you know, as a college coach, you definitely got to talk to those parents, you know, and you got to make sure that, that they're comfortable with that fit. But it's one of those things that, to me, college recruiting has changed over the years. Like when it was me, you got letters. And oh man, those letters were awesome. Right, you know, they had the school insignia on them. There's not a lot of that going on anymore. Now it's social. Oh, it's more social media now. More Instagram. Yeah. You get followed by a coach on Instagram and then they start messaging you that way. Right. There was very few letters that mine got. It was all Instagram, Twitter, maybe an occasional email, things like that. You know, and I always thought it was cool. And that's probably because I'm old school. When that coach would come onto campus and they'd have their polo on from whatever school, boy, you want to talk about getting the kids talking. And that was some cool stuff when coaches would do that. And I know their time is super valuable, and recruiting is, you know, used to be recruiting budgets, especially for track or something, they're probably kind of non-existent. So they recruited a lot of the local kids, things like that. So it was a little easier. But now a lot of it's more social media driven that I have seen. So it's, and I get it. It's a little easier that way, but man, it still is cool when they get those letters from the coaches. Kids love that stuff. Kids love getting mail.
I was not a recruited athlete at all. But still got recruited for college, you know, to go to college. And I remember having a garbage bag, you know, finally paring down. So there, and it was a garbage bag full of stuff. So I always thought, you know, I was like, oh my God, you know, these highly recruited kids, like, oh my God, like they got garbage bags full of just letters on letters on letters. It's interesting what you just said there at the end that, you know, they like receiving letters. I wonder if it's a little bit like there's still this like romanticism, you know, George, if I email you after this interview and I say, hey, George, you did a great job, you know, appreciate you, blah, blah, blah. That means something to you. It's like, oh, thanks for saying thanks, Mike. If I were to send you a handwritten note and George, just to not disappoint you, I'm not going to do this. I'm sorry. But if I did, you'd be like, oh my God, first of all, you wouldn't be able to read it because my handwriting's terrible. That's why I really don't do personal notes because I can't even read my own handwriting. But you'd be like, oh my God, wow, Mike took the time. And for me, it's a little bit like, yeah, I don't care about the medium. Like I care that you said, thanks, you know, like, you know, what is it? The, what do we say around Christmas? It's the thought that counts. It's the thought that counts. Like, it's like, you wanted to say thanks. I don't care if you texted me, emailed me, smoke signaled me, letter. That doesn't, the vehicle doesn't matter to me personally. But I wonder if it's now, even for kids, 18-year-old kids, if it's flipped, it's like, oh, I never get a letter. My parents, only time they get something to mail is it's a bill. Now I get a letter from a coach and it's special news. I wonder if there's a little bit like, I wonder if some recruiters are like, hey man, you know, I do letters because it sets me apart. That's, you know, you're always trying to set apart. Okay. Last two questions. What advice would you give? There's a high school coach. I shouldn't even say high school coach. There's a track coach, track specifically, that wants to transition into administration. It might be next year, it might be 5 years. They maybe, you know, want to work towards that. What advice would you give them to be as prepared as possible for an opportunity that might come next year or 5 years from now?
The biggest thing that I see is get involved on your campus, that campus administration side. If you're not in a leadership role or attempting to be in a leadership role or helping at that level, it's kind of hard to say, okay, well, I haven't done this at a small scale, but I want to do it on a big scale. And so that's kind of how we push a lot of our guys. Like we mentioned before, those campus coordinator roles, things like that. And, you know, get into something in that role, or even from a track side, you know, if you can, I'm a big believer, if you can run off a quality track meet or a cross country meet, I mean, you're obviously you're an organized individual. Because that's not an easy thing to do. And so, you know, the campus roles, everything that you can do on that scale, is huge, showing, cause if, like I said before, if you can't do it on a small scale, it's going to be hard to justify you doing it on a very large scale. So, to me, that's the biggest thing, get involved in those roles, be seen as that guy on campus that, okay, I can do that. Or if your principal comes to, yep, I can do that. And so you have to be somebody that people see you as accountable and that they can count on you to get stuff done, or maybe, you know, be that guy that nobody has to tell you to do anything. You just do it. So that's huge.
And so my last question, you know, after you're in a career now, you're as an athletic director, you've had a career as a teacher and track coach. Do you regret it? Are you glad you made the change, or would you rather be now on your 25th year of coaching track and field?
Depends on the day that you ask that.
I'm going to count how many times you said depends.
It depends. That's, I'm telling you, that's my day in a nutshell there as well. It's a gray area. Wow. Would I change it? I don't think so. I think I've got to have the best of both worlds. I loved being around kids. I love being around other coaches. And now in this role, you like to think that you're serving those people. Now, I know a lot of times the coaches don't see it that way, but that's always the intent. But I think it's been good for me just as an individual to be able to see those things from the seat that I'm in now to where I was. Are there days you miss the kids? Absolutely. There's times you go to events and stuff like that, and you just sit there and you just smile just watching the kids because it's fun. And then there's other days it's not a lot of fun. But that's life in general. I mean, honestly. Yeah. So yeah. It's been good. I don't think I'd change anything because, it's one of those things. I don't like to look back too far, especially because, it doesn't really do you a lot of good. Now, if you want to look back to reflect on next time, if this comes up, you have to do that. But I don't look back and say, kind of like you were talking earlier about the, taking this path or this path. This is the path I'm on. You know what I mean? And you just kind of take the curves in the road as they come along now at this point, because you can't go back and do it again anyway. So, it's been good. I've been very fortunate, been very blessed. It's been a good ride so far.
Well, George, you hit the nail on the head there, in my opinion, about serving others. And, I had a similar experience as I went out of coaching and into this role. And I was like, man, I don't affect kids anymore. I used to have 30 to 100 kids, whatever. And then one day it hit me, as I'm serving coaches around the country, it's like, oh, wait a minute. I actually might be affecting more kids positively by serving the coaches who serve them. And I think that's what an athletic director does. An athletic director that's doing it well, they are supporting their coaches so they can go out and do the things that we talked about in the positive manner, the positive impact that they make on kids. So, there is no bigger fan, no bigger cheerleader of track coaches than this guy right here, but I'm super glad that you're affecting a lot more kids and affecting our sport. We've got a voice in decisions that are being made in the athletic world and your athletic departments with someone who understands the sport, understands the expectation and stress and pressures of a track coach specifically. So, man, just so grateful for the role that you sit in, and excited for the growth that you're going through. Cause it kind of boggled me when you talked about opening a new high school, and I knew that'd be a big endeavor, but then I was like, oh my God, that's right. You've never done it at a high school. So how do you like day one, how do you envision day 100 and the end of the year? Like, oh my God, that's crazy stuff, man. It's quite amazing. But George, man, I'm so thankful. Honestly, thankful for your time. It's one of the most valuable things that you can give me. I know you're busy. So for you to carve out this amount of time for us just is, it means the world to me. And I really do appreciate your perspective on things. We're at 250 plus episodes here, and amazing coaches. You should be listening to everyone if you haven't out there. This is a very unique perspective that we need to know affects our sport. And I'm really proud to be able to present your story and how you're affecting our sport. So, man, thank you so much for your time and
feedback. Enjoyed it. It was awesome. Thank you very much. Always enjoy talking track.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, everybody, thanks for being here this week. Join us next week. We'll probably have a coach, not an AD, but you never know, because we're going to continue to try to bring a full scale, full circle around our sport. And that includes administrators, that includes officials, et cetera, in our great sport, because that's what makes this great sport so awesome is the total package. So, George, man, thank you again for being here. You guys join us next time, and we'll do it all over again. Have a great weekend.
The goes to appreciate the coach, the ones who point people most. Every season needs a voice of reason, speaking the growth. Got a prep for you, carry the load. It's coffee to the soul for those of us who stay on the go. Proper handoff to stay in the zone. What you packing for the road? There's more than one way to the goal. Take notes, that's paying your toll. It ain't practice if your purpose ain't clear. It can't happen till you listen with both ears. Can't mentor without a mentor's years of experience, you can reinvent those years. Every plan's got a standard to live up to. And the price, sacrifice, can you give up you? It's a choice and a fight, not a win or lose. It's not a ploy, but advice so y'all can make more moves. It's not about how to, it's all about why. You don't know till you know who you are inside. 6 million ways to tie, choose none. So we all cross the finish line, the work ain't done. So we learn from the experts, we all gotta put in the legwork. Gil Athletics is a network, it's all about connections. Put together for the profession, so every track coach could be a blessing.